exclusively on CBS All Access. A Legend returns.
I have a mission. There's not a hell of a chance for somebody to stop me.
Patrick Stewart in Star Trek Picard. Now streaming only on CBS All Access.
Welcome to the Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Dominic Patton, Senior Editor and Chief TV Critic for Deadline Hollywood. And today, well, we're on episode 7 of the 10 episodes of season 1 of Star Trek Picard. And I think you're going to see this is where things really start to take a turn towards the end, or rather, the beginning of Act 3. To that end, joining us today, we have showrunner Michael Chabon, as well as VFX supervisor Jason Zimmerman, giving us a look at what went into the story and what went into making that story hit the screen.
And I am very, very glad to see your face.
Welcome.
This is Commander Deanna Troi. Dr. Soji Asher.
Just Soji.
Long story.
Dad!
What? Stop yelling!
It's Jean-Luc Picard!
Pause music. Say again!
Hello, Will.
Oh man! Oh.
So, Michael, this episode, which is now episode 7, which, of course, as I know many of you know, dropped almost 12 hours ago on CBS All Access. So, as we always say, if you haven't watched the latest episode of Picard, you might want to hit the pause button now, come back later after you have, and that way you won't be so surprised, shocked, or outraged by the various spoilers that we're about to drop as we talk about it. Michael, we've now gone well over the halfway point with this 10-episode first season. When we last spoke to you, we were talking about the premiere. For your perspective, where is it at? And how do you feel about the show as it's evolved over these 7 episodes so far?
Where is the show at this point in terms of the characters and the
arcs? In terms of where you wanted it to be and where you saw it going.
I know, in some ways, I think from the beginning, as soon as we started to conceive of what became the episode Nepenthe, we always viewed it as, to a certain degree, a kind of pause or respite. And, you know, we had all the elements in play by this point. The entire mystery has been laid out in all its particulars. It hasn't been resolved yet. That's coming. But it has all been laid out. And the players, the sort of anticipated meeting of Soji and Picard has now taken place. And at that point, it felt like we wanted to give things a chance to sort of settle. And as soon as that notion was in our minds, I think out of that just naturally grew organically this idea of a planet, Nepenthe, that is itself sort of intended to be a place where people would go to recharge or to find some kind of healing. And out of that idea emerged this whole notion of, hey, let's have the Riker Troi family be living there. And well, why would they be living there on this particular kind of planet? And out of that grew the idea that they had built a family in the intervening period since the last time we saw them when they were getting married. And
Which I thought was a very nice – I mean, we had Jonathan in for a previous podcast, and he and Akiva told us this great story about how you guys hired him as a director. And Jonathan's a pretty established director. He's done Discovery and a ton of different stuff, you know, always working. And then realized, like, oh, my God, he's here. We have to have this as a part of this. And I wanted to get a sense from you, when I watched the episode, when Jonathan and Sir Patrick are together, mm-hmm. you know, there's certain pivot points in Picard that we all as fans want to see, mm-hmm. and then as storytellers want to know. Mm-hmm. Of course, the big lead up to Patrick saying engage, mm-hmm. and a few other things like that. Mm-hmm. But this was so touching.
Well, I mean, I will say, when you see them together, not just those two, but all the legacy cast members from TNG, when they're on the set, when they're on location, even if it's not, even if it's the second or third day that they've been together, but especially on those first moments when they were reuniting to work together again, it is incredibly touching. It's incredibly moving. They love each other and they really are friends, and they, you know, they've all, I think you could say they've all worked hard, because it can be hard to sustain. You get so close. You get close on the set of a movie shoot or, you know, a TV show shoot. But to work together all those years, they became incredibly close. And yet time and distance have scattered them. And, you know, it could have been easy for them to maybe let go of each other, but they haven't at all. So just to see the intensity of the affection and the friendship between these people, it is really moving. I think in seeing Patrick with Jonathan, it was very hard not to think, it's not just that we want to see the character Riker and the character Picard back together. We want to take these two men who so clearly love each other and love to work with each other and get some of that energy out there on the screen.
Talking about energy on the screen, Jason, this is your first time joining us on the podcast, so yes. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Brad.
Jason, you are kind of you're the visual effects overseer of all things in the Trekverse now.
Yes.
So I wanted to get a sense, is there, as you deal with individual shows, and pardon me if I'm kind of pausing a bit, I want to phrase this properly, is there a different palette for every show? And how do you find that look and find that texture that you want to really make this thing blow big? Because all of the new Trek shows look big.
Yeah, they feel big, certainly when we're working on them. There's definitely, I think, an attempt for each to have its own visual personality. I mean, that's something that, you know, I know Alex and Michael and Akiva, you know, spoke with Philip, our DP, about for a long time, sort of developing the look of the show. And having it be something unique and I think a little bit different from Discovery. You know, Discovery has a certain look and I think a certain action to it and a certain scope and scale. That is different from this show. This show, you know, first of all, being more planet-based, like the episode we're talking about now, I mean, there's a lot more opportunities to sort of build worlds, as it were, as opposed to just, you know, more spacescapes. But you know, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the show is different tonally from a story perspective, mm-hmm. very much so. And as such, you know, it's our job in visual effects, as much as it can be a spectacle sometimes. The job is to tell the story first and foremost, right? And
now, Michael, for you as showrunner and on a show where, you know, you and I have talked about this, and I know this, I mean, one of the things I think is beautiful about Picard is that there are these very intimate relationships led by a clearly incredibly talented actor in Sir Patrick and a number of very talented actors from Allison and Michelle and others who are newly to this, and then, of course, bringing back legacy characters. But there also is, as you guys all talked about when we were at Comic-Con last summer, like, this is going to be something. This is not going to be two aliens and maybe you see the string hanging from beneath. This is going to really look. And Jonathan, when he was here with us, he talked about that. He's like, hey, look, Next Gen might have looked great, but, you know, now when you look at it, it shows some of its age, some of the paint's cracking, for lack of a better way. This looks huge in terms of visual effects. But what is that like for you, working with Jason, working with his department, and working with that sense of where your imagination narratively can go with what this story is?
It is miraculous working with Jason and his team. And
we're going to stop the podcast there. I mean, that's pretty clear. Jason, say you with the Emmys.
When I say miraculous, I mean like you are down on your knees praying for a miracle and then it happens. Mm. That's what I mean by miraculous. Like, you know, we had an incredibly gifted production designer, set decorator, properties master, all of these people who brought everything they had to creating sets and locations that would embody the kind of things that are described
and
people in
who
the
often,
scripts.
Those below the line people often get overlooked in the magnificence of what create these shows.
However, there's this, you know, in the era before VFX or when VFX weren't even called that, and they were in a very crude state that involved just like overlaying sort of little animated squiggles on top of things to be phaser beams or what have you on the original series.
Well, that's pretty scathing.
In that era, well,
the whole of we've the all 90s seen the. No,
I said original series. That's 60s. We're talking the rubber suit era, and the, you know, where you see these process shots of, but there's a thing that can happen even after all of those great artists have done their work that takes it to that makes it, when you look at it on screen, seem that you're looking through a window into the future, and that's what Jay-Z and his team do. They just bring that it's convincing. They make it convincing on a level that, you know, I'm astonished, because like I spend, you know, if you're working on the story, if you're in editorial, you see it over and over and over and over again in its unfinished form, with the VFX in it, either no VFX or very crude VFX, you know, the preliminaries. And I've had the experience with almost every episode this season of not seeing it for a while and then seeing it when these guys have completed their work, and it just takes your breath away. My jaw dropped when I saw, you know, I saw the
okay,
Borg
so
cube.
On that, we have to play a game of favorites now. Okay, so we're at episode 7. As where we are right now, and I know you guys are in the process of getting the finale in its final form in its various ways, the season 1 finale. What do you think? Start with Jason, because he's the maestro. What is the best VFX? I like to call it a display in some ways, as opposed to effect, because I think it gives it the respect it deserves, that has happened so far in the series.
I think the most rewarding thing we've worked on has been the Borg cube, both the interior.
Yay! I won the bet.
And the exteriors, just because it's something that it's been a challenge to bring to life, because it's gigantic, it's massive, and you're seeing it in space.
And it's dilapidated, hard to do.
It is. And how do you display that scale, right? In space, sometimes you don't have the geography to really say how big something is or is not. Mm-hmm. So how do you spatially show the relationship mm-hmm. between the La Serena and the cube mm-hmm. and all these different things and get a sense of scale and scope and all that stuff? So I think – and both interiors and exteriors, I think, present the same challenges and opportunities to really like – make it so much bigger, like he was alluding to, when you're seeing him in the edit and you see just a blue screen.
Yeah.
Even I, as the visual effects supervisor, know what can go back there. And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, it's just, it's a blue. You have to start seeing the shots progress. And then the first time you see the gray shade, you go, oh, okay. It's really, it's mm-hmm. actually a kilometer and a half mm-hmm. deep behind them. You know, and that there's something that just, as it develops, seeing that come to life has been really rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I was about to say, you know, I was watching for months, Patrick and Jonathan DeLarco standing on this sort of a gangway set that looked really cool. When you were on the set, it looked cool, but it's tiny. I mean, compared to a Borg cube, the interior of a Borg cube. And then when I saw – and then I went to see The Rise of Skywalker when that came out in mm-hmm. whatever that, December. And I loved the broken Death Star set in that, and when you're in the interiors of that, and I at that point I still had only seen very preliminary things, and I was like, oh man, I wish our Borg cube could look like that. And then when I saw what they had done, I think I like what these guys came up with as much as, if not even a little more than, the interior of that broken Death Star. I think it's just spectacular.
Where have you hidden Picard and the synth? Tell me where I can find Picard and your little protege.
We know you let them into Subsector 11 and that only you returned. The bodies of 4 heavily armed guards were afterward found in Subsector 11, and that will definitely be my second question. But for now, please answer the first.
They're gone.
And what was their destination? I strongly advise you do not say you don't know.
And also, I think one thing that works too is because you guys go there with the Borg, which was, you know, I think a hope of many people when Picard was announced that would be a part of it, because that storyline is so iconic and so long lasting, because him, like Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, and others, there's an embeddedment. It's the overlap of trauma, or however you want to describe it. But what happened to John Luke is always going to be a part of him through his life, and as we've seen in the series. I wanted to also, when we talk about that, and you mentioned Jonathan, this, we see the death of Hugh.
Yes.
In today's episode. Mm-hmm. Is this the last time we're going to see Hugh?
Well, it is Star Trek. You never know, certainly.
Because you're in the process of you're working on season two. You're writing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're working on season two. I will not say anything about that. But you never know. Certainly.
Now, what is that?
I mean, Tasha Yar died.
Yeah,
she came back in various ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a sense of? And I actually don't want any spoilers, but I want to give a sense of where things are kind of at in terms of the writing of two and how you're feeling about it.
Well, there are a lot of monkeys in season two, so we're going to have a big cast of various kinds of monkeys.
Is this like a Wizard of Oz thing?
I can't really go into any more detail.
You can't confirm Wizard of Oz monkeys? Or is
are they flying or are they hovering monkeys? The season is broken, which is a good thing. I'm going to be writing two of the episodes, for that season, and I'm at work at those. And, we're heading into the writing portion of season two.
Let's talk a little bit about the writing of this episode, of episode seven, which you wrote with Samantha Humphrey. Mm-hmm. For your process, of course, you know, many people know you as we always love to say it, Pulitzer Prize winning author, which well-deserved. I mean, you're a brilliant writer. But writing for television and co-writing with people, what is that process like for you? And is that – because, of course, you're also in the dual role in this season of being showrunner too.
Right. Well, it varied from episode to episode. A lot of the episodes were written collaboratively, but even having said that – the nature of the collaboration varied from episode to episode.
Oh, interesting.
So I think most frequently it was in the form of trading drafts. One writer writing a draft, then usually me, a showrunner, rewriting the draft. Or sometimes there'd be intervening stage there with Akiva doing a draft, and then after the first writer, and then me doing a revision. Usually there'd be, even once we got to that stage, there'd be multiple.
And well, that's part of it too, because you've got Akiva, who, you know, Oscar-winning writer. You've got Alex, Alex Kurtzman, clearly the executive producer and master of all things Trekverse right now on CBS All Access. A lot of cooks.
Well, it's not. Yes, I mean, it's we have. I'd say we have a deep bench, and
diplomatic.
You know, I think the important – what you're looking for ultimately is a consistency of tone. So even though we had all these – we have all these great writers and they wrote great scripts, there's an important step that has to happen where the showrunner, who ultimately is in control of the tone of the show, and you know, I would go through the scripts looking for – with an eye to, you know, is Picard speaking the way that Picard speaks on this show? And by the way, when I say that, that in itself is something that comes out of dialogue with Sir Patrick. Like, Sir Patrick was ultimately always the sort of arbiter of, like, would Picard say this or would he say it that way?
Well, I know, because, I mean, he's an executive producer on the season, and I know he takes that job very seriously of, like – I mean, he is, as I think you told me once, like, if you have a question about what would Jean-Luc Picard, you can ask someone.
But with the other characters, with the way Raffi talks, with the way that Rios talks, you know, to go through and make sure everyone, and Jurati, she has a very particular way of speaking that also did emerge through working, you know, with in partnership with Allison Pill. From that point of view, there always has to be sort of a last pass that goes through the hands of the showrunner, whoever the showrunner is. And with the episode seven, it was more the typical pattern of the writer wrote a draft and then I took a whack at it.
One of the things about this episode is, and we talked about it earlier today, is, you know, there are a lot of legacy characters in this episode, for instance, Jonathan, Marina. And by the way, I just want to say, not a legacy character, but I can't get enough of Peyton Liss. I mean, she is so great.
Yeah, and
like,
I agree.
Like, so great.
I agree.
But we see
she acted her way into the role on the show that she has.
How do you mean?
In other words, that we had, you know, we were still evolving the later episodes of the season when we were starting production or pre-production on the first couple episodes. So, you know, when we heard her at the table read for whatever the first episode she's in too, I guess.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sitting next to Akiva and we just turned to each other and and we had cast her. We liked what she had done before, but we just turned to each other and said, oh my God, she's amazing. And as soon as we saw that, and we saw also the chemistry that she had with Harry Treadaway, that character of Nerissa just emerged as a much more important character in the season than we had originally.
And extremely pivotal where you have her at this point in the season. But as we talk about legacy characters, killing one off, you know, Jonathan's character, Hugh, was so beloved. And then when you brought him back in this changing persona of almost like this link between the world of the Borg, the world of the Romulans and the Reclaimers and what have you. Why the decision? I mean, people die on TV shows all the time. And then, as you said, maybe they come back, maybe they don't. But to do that, having done so much to introduce this character, why have him back?
It came out of the story. It just seemed like that's what would happen. It's not like we brought Hugh back and said, let's bring back Hugh and kill him. You know, we wanted to bring back Jonathan and the character of Hugh because we had the need for that character. We had the need for an ex-Borg that could plausibly be the one who is in charge of this Borg reclamation project within the organization of the Romulan Free State. And, you know, we talked about possible ex-Borg characters besides, you know, Seven of Nine and Picard. And so, I mean, he was probably the first one whose name came up, and we thought, oh, that actually makes sense. That works. And then as we started to craft the story, and we brought Nerissa and her plans into it, and you know, Elnor and his interactions with Hugh, and then bringing how do we bring Seven back into the story? It just emerged out of the storytelling very organically, and it felt like, wow, that's actually what would happen given the circumstances.
Jason, I want to end today's podcast by asking you this: is there are so many challenges in today's media landscape when it comes to VFX? Is there are huge expectations? It's an ever-evolving and ever-developing field, and which people like Michael or directors or other people can like, why can't we have this? And there's often the answer is, well, because no one mentioned it before, but in fact, we could do that. I wanted to know from you is when you talk to people about the show, when people tell you what they think of the show, what are the elements of it that you're most proud of in your own work?
The elements I'm most proud of. I think particularly with Picard, I really like the invisible stuff that we're doing. And I mean, I say invisible, obviously when you see the exterior of the Borg cube, you're aware that it's visual effects. But I think, you know, some of the set extension stuff that we're doing where it's, you know, we're not making this giant kilometer and a half space, but we're just adding, little touches to things to help aid in the storytelling. I think it's fun to do that stuff. I mean, of course I enjoy doing the big visual effects and the spectacles and the space battles like we did in Discovery, but there's something fun about doing, you know, like the establishers of different planets and just trying to make them look and push them as far as you can to make them look photoreal so that when you're watching, it just helps tell the story. Here's where we are. And now we're going to cut inside and we're going to start with the scene. And so I think being able to help establish those worlds and do it in a way that actually contributes to the story is a lot of fun.
Now, speaking of contributing to the story, you guys are going to be joining us for next week's podcast. So on that, thank you very much for today.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap on today's Star Trek Picard podcast. Thanks for listening, as always, to, as I like to say, the Star Trek Picard podcast. As you know, and as I've said week after week, you can listen to this podcast every week also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like getting your podcasts. See you next week.